100% vixen sort of way. The killer look in her eyes makes the cauldron inside me boil. Whatever scrap of sanity I had is slapped away as she undoes her shorts and pushes them down to reveal her thighs, which I have never seen until this moment. I am salivating. There's a challenge in her eyes, making her the bravest girl I've ever met, because I will bloody well lay her down right here on Blake's deck and pick up where I left off in that hotel room. I will have that bikini off faster than she can gasp. I'm just about to charge forward when she turns and bends over, slowly picking up her clothes. My body seizes. She saunters away with half her damned ass hanging out of the sides of her swimsuit, teasing me as her hips sway back and forth, back and forth, back and, oh God, this hurts. I groan in agony, but she takes no pity. Anna is good at not looking back. As she and her edible backside disappear into the bungalow, I cram my fingers into my hair and crouch, feeling as if a horse has kicked me in the middle. A chuckle comes from the back doors, and Blake is standing there, arms crossed over his chest. "That was brutal, brah. You so deserved it." With my head hanging, I manage to say, "Stay away, or I'll kill you." "You couldn't pay me to come near you right now." I sigh and try to breathe. Blake laughs a bit more at my expense, before leaving me alone in my misery. Chapter 22. Learning the Hard Way. Sometimes I feel the fear of uncertainty stinging clear, and I can't help but ask myself how much I let the fear take the wheel and steer. Drive by Incubus. The problem about being with Anna is she makes me forget everything else. She looks at me like I'm her hero, and I forget who I really am. She smiles at the world around her, and I forget it's an ugly place. She exudes comfort, and I forget we're in constant danger. I forget all the reasons I've stayed away from her, all the reasons it's better for her not to care about me. I'm sprinting up the same stretch of beach Anna and I walked down less than an hour ago. I'm cursing myself and swearing that if anything's happened to Anna, I will find those guys from the carnival and take care of them. I'm furious with myself on so many levels. I let it slip during our walk that Anna's father demanded I stay away from her. I guilted Anna into showing me her gorgeous aura of love, and then freaked out and was an arsehole to her all over again. I talked her into going on the Ferris wheel and got so completely carried away trying to kiss her that I never saw the Whisperer coming. Then I got us cornered by a fucking gang where she tried to use her powers of influence and ended up with a gun pointed in her face. Score 2 for the Angels who saved her ass once again while I stood by helplessly. I grit my teeth as I run. She's with Blake now, who showed up at the carnival on his motorcycle to whisk her away. Though I'm certain she's safe, the band of fear around my torso doesn't loosen. The gang is long gone, down the strip in the opposite direction, but I don't stop running. I need to deal with Anna. I still cannot believe a Whisperer caught us nearly kissing. I'm sick to my stomach. I want to hurl onto the beach, but there's no time for that. I need to remind Anna of all the things she makes me forget, the most important thing being that it's my job to keep us aware. It's my responsibility to keep an eye and ear out, since I know she won't. I failed us today, and she made it even worse by trying to take on those gang members single-handedly. Why would she think that's possible? She should have left them to me. Doesn't she know what it'd do to me to see her killed? I race up the steps to Blake's deck, struggling for breath through the fog of overwhelming fear clouding my mind. I go straight to Anna, who looks afraid, and I take her face in my hands. I have to make her understand. "Don't ever do that again. I know it's dangerous, but there were 5 of them. I can bloody well handle myself, Anna." I let her go, frustrated that she doesn't get it. Back and forth we go, little Anna thinking she's a warrior fucking princess or something, and I'm about to lose my mind. "Give me your knife," she says. "What? What's she gonna do with it?" "Just give it to me," she demands. "Oh, bloody hell. No, Anna. I don't know what you're trying to do, but this is Anna comes at me, and next thing I know, I feel myself going backward and down. I land hard on my back with Anna looking down at me. "Give me your knife," she says calmly. Blake whistles, and I stare up into her face of fierce determination, framed in a tumble of blonde hair. God, that was hot, I say like an idiot. She holds out her hand, and now I'm curious enough to dig my knife out and hand it over. She turns her head, throws the damn thing with a strong flick, and it lands in the side of a wooden heron's head. Holy shit, I can't believe it. Lust bashes me like a sledgehammer, and I suddenly imagine her naked. Dude! Blake yells, snapping me back to reality. Anna stares down at me as if she's conquered me. You showed your colours. Did not, I reply quickly. But even as I say it, I think our bleeding well might have. You totally let him out, brah! Shut up, I say to Blake as I push to my feet. I will beat him later. We're all standing now, and Anna's wearing a satisfied look. I've been training. I'm not completely helpless anymore. I can see that, I say. But as impressive as that was, I still don't want her trying to take on every bastard she comes across, thinking it will be that simple. She steps closer to me and looks up. I get it now, okay? Everything you've always tried to warn me about, I get. Today was... petrifying? Eye-opening? She clears her throat. I came here and said what I needed to say. Now I have to go. I mean it this time. And I can see in her eyes that she does. She's been sufficiently scared by our encounter with the Whisper and gang. I'm sorry she had to learn the hard way. I'm sorry both of us have to be continuously reminded. It only takes one Whisperer to report back to the Dukes. We won't always be able to weasel our way out of it like Anna did today, telling the spirit we were practicing our work skills together. I listen as Anna changes her ticket to an earlier flight. She gathers her things, and Blake and I walk her to her car. She hugs Blake first. I rest my hands on my hips, resigned to be happy that I got to see her for one day. As horrid as certain events were, and as stupid as we were to tempt fate on that Ferris wheel, a bad day with Anna is better than a good day without her, and I've been without her so long. I'm pissed at myself for ruining half the day being an arse. She scans the skies before approaching me, and I feel a smatter of pride for her awareness. I don't expect her to touch me again, but when her arms circle my waist and her face presses against my chest, I'm immensely grateful. I scan the skies myself, but they're clear, so I pull her tighter. I let my chin rest on top of her head for 2 full seconds, and then she's pulling away, holding my hands. Her fingers slide slowly away from mine until we're no longer touching, and her eyes drop. A cavern of emptying loss opens inside me as I watch her go. I realize I can shield myself against everything else in this life, but I will never manage to keep Anna out. She's under my skin. She's in my head and in my heart, stretching out and taking up residence. When she leaves, the imprint of her stays, as always. But it's not enough. It's never enough. Chapter 23. Alive. And up until now I had sworn to myself that I am content with loneliness, because none of it was ever worth the risk. Well, you are the only exception. The Only Exception by Paramore. Come on, man, Blake says. We'll grab a drink. We're still standing in his driveway, staring down the street where Anna's rental car has disappeared into the distance. When I don't move or respond, he hits my arm to get my attention. I'll be in a bit, I say. He gives me a funny look, trying to read me. That's some crazy shit she told us, right? He asks. About the prophecy? I nod, staring back down the street until he sighs. All right, fine, I'll give you a minute, but hurry up. We only have one night until my pops gets back from wherever the hell they are. Vegas. Yeah, whatever. Just have your moment and get yourself inside. I'm gonna kick your ass at Grand Theft Auto. I know he's trying to cheer me up. While other blokes would be having a party or going out, our idea of non-parental fun is just the opposite. He jogs to the house, leaving me to stare down his private drive. She's gone, and I've no clue when I'll see her again. Come on, Kai, he calls from the doorway. With stiff movements, I force myself to go. He hands me a chilled beer and sits in one of his video game chairs in front of the giant screen. I play and try to relax, but I keep thinking about the prophecy. At what cost will the Earth be rid of demons? At the cost of Anna's life? I won't let her die alone to make this happen. I'll go down fighting with her. I'd die today for a chance to see them all sucked permanently into hell with me. But I'd die with one regret. I'd die wishing I'd shown Anna how I truly felt. I'd spend eternity in hell wishing I'd had one proper moment with Anna where I wasn't scheming to sleep with her or pushing her away. One night with no games between us. In that moment, I'm filled with a sudden panicked sense of urgency. My car crashes and burns on the screen and Blake laughs. I jump to my feet, startling him. "What are you doing?" he asks. "I have to go. I know I must look deranged, that's certainly how he's looking at me, but I don't care." I run to the kitchen where I think I've left my keys, and he jumps up to follow. "Where are you going? We have one night to chill, don't leave me hanging." I find my keys with the silver skull and drumstick crossbones, and I nearly run into Blake. "I have to stop her." He's still looking at me like I'm a lunatic. "Who, Anna? For real? But you're always so careful trying to stay away from her. What about her dad, man?" "Fuck him." He chuckles but shakes his head. "This is a bad idea," he sings as I brush past him. I spin on my heels and eye him as a sudden grin overtakes my face. "It's the best idea I've ever had, mate." I turn and he grabs my arm, getting uncharacteristically serious. "Just tonight, while they're away, Kai. After tonight, you can't mess around like this." "I know," I promise him. "Just tonight." I must look like a wild mess when I approach the old fellow at the ticket counter. I've run from the parking lot, and it's hot as balls out there. "I need to get something to my friend," I tell him as I catch my breath. "She's on flight 428 to Atlanta. Can I see her, just for a moment?" "No, sir. I would suggest calling her if she has a cell phone." "She's got it switched off. Can you page her?" "I cannot. That flight is about to start boarding. I'm very sorry." But he's not sorry. His aura is clearly annoyed. He's already looking past me like he's going to tell the next customer to come forward. I wave my hand. "Wait, I'll buy a ticket." I yank my wallet from my back pocket, and he jumps back like I'm pulling a gun when I whip out my credit card. "Sir, they're about to begin boarding," he repeats. "You might not make it." "Well, then I suggest you run my card quickly. I'll take my chances." He grits his teeth and types, swipes, and prints the boarding pass. I snatch it and take off. I'm so thankful we're in Santa Barbara, not LA. The security line isn't too awful, though I'm bouncing on the balls of my feet the whole time, making the lot of people around me nervous. When I'm through security, I sprint, counting down the gates as I go. My vision spirals down the hall to Anna's gate, but I can't see her. "Come on, come on!" I weave through the slow people. When I get a bit closer, they announce the initial boarding call. As passengers begin to stand and move, I spot the top of her blonde head, and I let out an airy laugh. "Anna!" It takes a moment, and then her head whips around. Her eyes are red and swollen. My first instinct is to run to her, but she may not want to see me now. She might refuse me, push me away as I've so often done to her. But I have to know. I stop at the edge of her row, and it's as if the people have made a path down the aisle just for me, straight to Anna. She seems to be in shock, sitting there at the other end, staring at me. And I seem to be stuck here at the edge of the aisle. "What's wrong?" she asks me with fear in her voice. I peer around for whispers. "Nothing." Her forehead scrunches. "How did you get through security?" "I bought a ticket." I hold it up. The people in the aisle ping their attention back and forth between us like it's a rom-com tennis match. You're going on this flight?" she asks. Clearly this is out of character for me, as she's quite confused. "No, but those buggers wouldn't page you and your phone is off." As it sinks into her mind that I'm here for her, she slowly stands and makes her way toward me. I'm so afraid she'll tell me to leave. I have to get the words out before she boards. Oh, bloody hell, I'm really not good at this. I could talk dirty to her all night, but saying how I feel is altogether different, too exposing. Saying these words is the ultimate vulnerability. Anna must know this. It's why she needs to hear the words from me so badly. Bugger, say something. I lower my voice. Anna. Right, that's a start. What next? Tell her when it all changed. The night of the summit, when you were saved. She's staring up at me, hanging on every word. It was the only time in my life I thanked God for anything. Her eyes flutter closed and I exhale. I know the words have hit home because only Anna can understand how huge that was for me. When her eyes open again, we drink each other in. She takes my face in her sweet hands and doesn't look away. I love you, Kai. Now it's my turn to close my eyes as I savour those words. It's the first time anyone said it to me and truly meant it. I want to say it back, but I'm overwhelmed. That damn urge to cry is here again and I can't allow it. I keep my eyes closed a moment longer and swallow away the burn. When I look at Anna again, I take her face in my hands and she grasps my wrists. I throw myself out there. Spend the night with me. Her eyes widen. Kaya, we shouldn't. But there's no backbone in her words. She's begging me to talk her into it, to say more of the words she's hungry to hear. I want to give her what she wants in every way. I'm tired of living like I'm not alive. I take her shoulders. I'm bloody sick to death of it. I want one night to be alive with you. I press my forehead to hers, and now I'm the one begging. Please, Anna. One last night and we'll go back to being safe again. I need this. I need you. I lift my head and look at her so she'll know I mean it, but I see worry in her eyes. I don't blame her for needing reassurance. I'll be good. I won't let anything happen. As we stand there with our eyes locked, the wait is excruciating. I need this so badly. I don't know what I'll do if she says no. Anna's hands move down my forearms, and her fingers twine tightly together with mine. Let's go, she says. She bites her bottom lip nervously as a grin spreads across my face. We both let out exultant laughs in disbelief that this is happening. I grab her bag, and we simultaneously search around us. No whisperers in sight. I never let go of Anna's hand. For the first time in my life, I think to myself, so this is what it feels like to live. For the first time in my life, I'm alive. Chapter 24. Let Me Kiss You. Our night is lit by the city moon, and I see myself reflect on you. I know what I was meant to do. Aviation High by Semi-Precious Weapons. The whole day has been a disastrous embarrassment. First, we show up at my flat, where I'm berated by Michael for missing another practice. Then I realise the bloody flat is in ruin from my party on Thursday, and Anna wants to clean it herself. Pardon me, but I'm disgraced by the thought of either of us cleaning. Then she finds the lyrics to Good Thing in my handwriting. Fantastic. And to add a cherry on top, Anna finds remnants of cocaine on my coffee table and goes all Daughter of Belial on me. I shouldn't have found her so sexy in that moment, but when Anna gets possessed with any kind of desire, it's fucking hot. I'd rubbed her finger where she touched the powder and said, "The way this made you feel, that is what you do to me." It's so rare when I can make her understand the madness I feel for her. If she hadn't fled the flat to clear her mind at that very moment, I would have had no choice but to do all the sordid things to her I've been dreaming of. Now, I'm standing in my room, staring at the neat piles of dirty clothes along my wall, all organised by colour. I shake my head. I can't believe I allowed her to talk me into this. Anna should not have to clean any of this. I lift my chin as I get a whiff of something divine drifting down the hall. Slowly, I follow the scent to the kitchen doorway, where Anna stands with her hands on her hips, surveying pots and pans that are giving my stove a workout for the first time ever. She's softly singing to herself, "I knew you were trouble when you walked in." I will forgive her for the Taylor Swift lyrics because she looks so bloody adorable standing there cooking, creating something with her hands for my consumption. I don't think Anna will understand how intimate I find it that she wants to feed me. As far as I'm concerned, it's an act of foreplay. It's been roughly 18 months since I kissed her, sinfully too long. When I begin to think of my hands on her, my mouth tasting hers, my body goes completely rigid with intense need, and my sight begins to fog. Take her. Take her now. Right here. Who needs whisperers when you have a mind like mine that makes completely devious demands of your body? I'm rational enough to know I cannot obey these commands, but I want to so badly it hurts. Anna reaches out to stir a simmering red sauce and she freezes. Very slowly, she turns and sees me. She sets down the spoon and takes a step back. Smart girl. I have to touch her and she knows it. I fight every urge that's giving me permission to be rough. With every step I take toward her, she takes a step back until she's cornered against the sink and I'm inches away, hovering over her, breathing in the air she exhales. I'm taking great care because I know she can see the beast in my eyes. I know she's both excited and frightened. I don't trust my hands right now, so I grab the sink on either side of her waist. I will not let go. And then I lower my head and I take her mouth with mine. Sugar. Salt. Soft and tender. Unmistakably Anna. Oh God, yes. This is what I've been missing. Anna must think it's safe because she suddenly goes wild. My vision turns white as I fight for control. She tastes and feels even better than I remember. Unlike me, she's not holding back. Her hands are in my hair, nails on my scalp and neck. She's feeling my shoulders and upper back. She's trying to pull me closer, but I've locked myself in this position and I dare not move. I kiss her deeper, letting my mind be taken to that epic place of beauty. And then I ease up and my lips linger over hers, covering them with small and gentle kisses until I have to go deeper again. When her pear-filled scent fills my senses, my body urges me again to take her. Anna grips my forearms and pulls her lips from mine, looking up. Are you okay? She has no clue just how okay I am. I want to show my gratitude in a very big way. I told her tonight wasn't going to be about that, but apparently my body didn't get the message. I push myself away from her and rake my hands through my hair. I need another bloody shower. I'm proud of myself for the self-control I've shown, but the showers are getting old. My body knows when it's being duped. The daily pain I deal with is so much more defined when Anna is near. I run the towel over my head one last time, and I'm about to drop it on the floor when I remember Anna is here and we're trying to keep the place clean. So I hold up the towel and awkwardly fold it in half and hang it askew on the rack. See? I can do this. I'll even take out the last bag of rubbish without her asking. I'm feeling good when I run into Anna in the hall at the stacked washer and dryer. That is, I was feeling good. Now I see the look on her face and the paper in her hand. Shite! Shite, shite, shite! It's the fucking note Anna Malone left me. I only remember one damn line from the whole thing, something about picking up where we left off. This is not good. I heard a rumor that you're not working, Anna says quietly. Is that true? I wish I could say yes, completely. Mostly. I work if whisperers come around or if my father gives me a task, but even with Marissa's nieces, it's not usually sex. She pauses, and I want to tell her everything, about how hard I've tried and how good I've mostly been, but the proof is right there in her hands that I've done something, sex or not. Were there whispers here when you had people over? When she asks this, I know what she's really asking. Did you hook up with her because you had to or because you wanted to? Emptiness fills me. I won't lie to her, even though I'd rather gouge my eye out than admit this. I shake my head. No, I wasn't working. She crumples the note and turns away from me, back to the washing machine, and I feel as if I'm falling. I know how she's feeling, I know that sickening sense of betrayal, and now I'm feeling like a hypocritical prat for giving her such a hard time about a kiss with Cope when I'd done even worse. God, if Capano had done to her what I'd done to the other Anna. I clench my jaw, then I get a grip. I have to fix this. Anna. She ignores me and goes about stuffing laundry in. Anne, please, listen. How can I make this go away? She turns to face me and her eyes are wet. I shove my hands into my hair, wondering how I can salvage this night. It was after I'd spoken with Marna, I try to explain. I believed you and Cope were together, even though Marna said you weren't. I was certain you'd fall in love with him. I hate admitting that my own insecurities led me to doing bastardly things, but I have to come clean with her. Anna closes her eyes, and her face is pained as if she's imagining the worst. I want to take those images from her. Did you sleep with her? She asks. No. Though I don't expect her to be impressed, I need her to know. It wasn't nearly as hard to stop as it has been with you. She still doesn't open her eyes. I've mucked it right up, haven't I? She looks at me now with sad eyes. I'd been good for so long, Anna. You wouldn't believe how good. 8 months since I'd had to work that party in New York. Nothing besides that except snogs in bars if whisperers showed. I wonder if she's able to understand how difficult it's been, how much I've missed her. A set of tears run down her cheeks. I want to wipe them, but I don't know if I'm allowed to touch her. When I saw you on Valentine's Day, I was going to tell you everything. I ramble on about how I'd found out about her and Cope. I rang Marna expecting another no, but she hesitated. There was nothing worth being good for anymore. I need to shut up. I'm digging myself a hole. Inexplicably, Anna holds out her hand to me. I stare at her offering for a moment before I take her hand in mine. She pulls me to her and says with conviction, "No more. No more running in the wrong direction." I exhale and feel the tension from my body release as she holds me tighter. It's going to be all right. We're going to work through this. I once again marvel at Anna's ability to forgive, to love selflessly. I only wish I could erase all the pain I've caused her. No more, I promise her. I start by gently kissing under one of her eyes, and then the other, and down her cheeks, soaking up the salty tears on my lips. Her hands are strong as she reaches up to grip the sides of my face. "You run to me," she demands. And then she kisses me hard. Her forwardness ignites me. I back her into the washer and dryer. My knee parts her legs until it's between her thighs. She is what I need. I know without a doubt I will never again run to another. "To you," I say against her mouth. "I swear it." Our kiss turns frenzied, and I fear I'll never be able to get enough. I fear my need will always overtake me. It's hard to control myself when she's wild like this, but if I focus on Anna and her pleasure instead of my own, perhaps that will sate me. I think about the striptease she did at Blake's and my mind goes berserk. Those thighs. If I can get her naked but keep my own clothes on, just for a moment. My lips pull from hers and move to her ear. I'm strangely nervous. I don't want to scare her away. I grip her tightly. "Let me see you again," I whisper. "What?" she whispers back. I don't ease up on my tight hold of her, and I nibble the freckle atop her lip. I know I'm being too vague, but I'm afraid she'll balk if I grunt "naked now," as I really want to. So I choose my words carefully, knowing I'll need to take this slowly, layer by layer. "Let me undress you. Not all the way. Just as you were today at Blake's. Please, let me see you again." Our cheeks are together, and after a moment I feel her nod. I don't hesitate. I pull the tank top over her head, and my pulse races at the sight of her pink bra and all that gorgeous, creamy skin. She reaches for my shirt, and I almost stop her, but the thought of my skin against hers changes my mind. I let her take my shirt off, but that's it. When the cloth is over my head, I smash myself against her, taking her mouth with mine and reveling in the feel of our chests, arms and stomachs flush together. She is so soft, and when our skin touches, the temperature goes up. I stop only to look at her, to make sure she's ready for the next layer to come off. She says nothing, only breathes rapidly as I feel around the edges of her shorts and slowly remove them. There are hips, thighs and legs in my sight now, and I'm dying to be naked with her. I close my eyes and my head drops back. Keep your shorts on, Ro. I'm going to focus on Anna. Her pleasure will be my pleasure. Let me kiss you, I beg. Okay, she whispers. No, I look at her, needing to be clear. I need to kiss your body. Her mouth opens, but it takes a second for the word okay to slip out again. I think she knows exactly what I mean. And if she doesn't, she's about to find out. I need to kiss her absolutely everywhere. Don't let any more clothing come off, I warn. Okay. She's breathy, and I have to make sure she understands. If we end up naked, I don't think I'll be strong enough to stop again. Promise me, Anna. I promise. Now that I know she'll be the strong one, I allow myself to let go. Her body is all mine, and I'm going to savor every single taste. She wriggles under my mouth as I slowly move along her shoulder and down over her collarbone. My hands encircle her waist and back, fingers splayed to hold her close. I examine her skin as I kiss it, finding each freckle along the way and making it mine. Her natural scent intoxicates me. I make it to her breasts and run my thumbs under the edge of her bra, dipping my tongue as far under the material as I dare. When I reach back to undo the clasp, she presses her back against the wall to smash my hand away, and I grin to myself. I'll get to those later. Down I go over her ribcage until I'm on my knees, staring at a blue heart charm dangling from her belly button. Holy. A sizzle of heat bolts to my core. You are killing me. I lick around her belly button and she shivers, moaning. Her hands grip my shoulders and then sink into my hair as my mouth moves farther south to the edge of her low knickers. I start at one hip and kiss along the edge to the other. The sound of her rapid breathing urges me on. I open my mouth and lightly sink my teeth into the skin at her hip, making her gasp. Then my tongue circles over the spot. I know I'm a fiend, but I want to mark her all over. I'm ready to go further, but Anna's legs are pressed together. When I move a hand down the back of one of her legs to bend her knee, she lets me. I gently pry her leg open enough to expose her inner thigh. Her hands are tight in my hair now, and I love knowing I'm making her crazy. This is the one thing I can give her, the one thing I'm good at. I've never been more eager to make someone experience such bliss. I kiss the inside of her thigh, running my tongue over the silky skin there. Anna lets out a gorgeous moan and she quivers, sliding down the wall. I move my hands back up to her waist to catch her. My mouth comes down inside her thigh even closer, and Anna exhales a strangled breath. Kai, I, you have to stop. Bugger, I need to reassure her. I want to keep my face right where it is and show her just how okay this is, but I know better. I force myself to stand and look at her, to remind her it's just me, and I won't do anything she doesn't want. Anna's chest is rising and falling quickly. Her cheeks are pink. Her pheromones are flooding the air and making my head spin like an aphrodisiac. I lean against her, dipping enough to align our hips and drive them together. Her head falls back as she feels me against her, and I know I can bring her pleasure just as easily this way as the other. But I want to be touching her with my hands, if not my mouth. My hand covers her warm stomach. Let me touch you, just on the outside. Let me make you feel good. She groans sweetly, a sound of need, and my hand trails down. So close. I keep my eyes on her face, though her eyes are closed. I love watching her reactions. I don't expect it when she begins to shake her head, or when she says, "No, no, we can't." Something is wrong. I drop my hand. What is it? I step away, worried I've upset her. "I'm sorry, Anna." "No," she says in a quaking voice. "I don't want you to be sorry. I'm not sorry." I blink. My skin flushes from fire to ice as she bends and pulls her clothes back on. I'm not at all certain what's going on. She pulls me into a hug and I have to remind myself she's prompting this touch, so it's okay. I let my arms go around her trembling form. "You're shaking," I say, still confused. Yeah, well, my body is pretty angry at me right now. She laughs shortly, without humor. But I don't want to take any chances when it comes to the hilt. Any remaining fire is put out at the mention of that thing, and my heart gives a lurch. The prophecy says the nef of light and dark has to be pure of heart. I assume to be able to use the sword of righteousness. I haven't really thought about what that would entail. You think it's that sensitive? I ask. I don't know. It's meant for angels, you know. Ugh, damn that stupid sword. Are you okay? She asks me. Actually, no. I don't think a moment of pleasure with the man she loves will render her impure, especially if she remains a virgin, but I understand her apprehension. A lot is at stake. I can't imagine the pressure she must feel. I hold her face and run my thumb over her cheek. Don't worry about me. I didn't mean to upset you. You didn't, she says. I love you. I want all that with you. Maybe someday. I shut my eyes against her hopeful words. I dare not believe there is a someday. There is here and now, and we're promised nothing more, especially with the prophecy hanging over us. She stretches up and kisses me. I think I need chocolate. This gets a laugh from me. Only Anna. Will you make me some brownies? Me? She must have misspoken. It's my turn to watch you cook. I can't help but grin. I assume you actually want to be able to eat these brownies. But Anna only laughs. She takes me by the hand, leading me down the hall toward the kitchen. Her diffusing tactic has worked, taking my mind off the disappointment of the moment. And one thing's for certain. After tonight, I'll never look at brownies the same way again. Chapter 25. Saving Z. This is our last night, but it's late and I'm trying not to sleep, because I know when I wake I will have to slip away. Daylight by Maroon 5. Tonight was the most extraordinary night of my life, but also the most difficult physically. I can't explain the monster that lives inside me or the battle I wage against it. I remember when Father called me a caveman to Anna the night he met her, and he laughed, but not because he was taking the piss. He laughed because he knows what I feel, how constant my longings are, and it's funny to him. Amusing that I fight for self-control every waking moment, that at any second I could turn into a raging lust hulk, never satisfied. Only not green, lucky me. There were times tonight when my fraying willpower was nearly shredded by innocent touches, and it kept me on edge. I know it was beyond stupid to chase her to the airport and beg her to come home with me. The smart move, the safe one, would have been to let her go back to Georgia. But as I hold her in my arms, in my bed, listening to the sound of her soft breathing, I can't bring myself to regret our one night together. We'd both finally fallen asleep a bit ago, but I woke during the night filled with familiar paranoia. It's worse with her at my side. Even though I know the Dukes and Whisperers are in Vegas tonight, I can't stomach the thought of Anna being in danger, all because of my selfish desire to have her. She's complex, my lovely Anna. All gentleness. A bleeding heart for injustice. A brilliant capacity for forgiveness. But despite her gentleness, I've seen how her hands ball into tiny fists when she's ticked off. I've witnessed the fire in her eyes when she's lost to the hunger of her demon side. I understand that hunger. That need to lose oneself completely to pure physical sensation with no regard to consequences. That urge to say fuck it all. The only difference is that she wants to lose herself in drugs, and I want to lose myself in skin. But obsession is obsession. To each his own. Anna mews next to me like a baby kitten, and snuggles closer, her knee rubbing my thigh. And, oh, bugger me, her hand lands on my lower stomach. Just a few inches south and I would be a happy man. I look over at the Sword of Righteousness hilt lying on the bedside table. It's mocking me, I swear. I know it keeps her safe, but I kind of hate that thing. I feel like it knows what I'm thinking, all the things I'd like to do to its sweet Anna. Things I dare say she's not ready for. The hilt doesn't seem to give a shite that I love her. It only sees that I'm a greedy bastard who wants every bit of Anna for myself. I want to save her each moment she looks at me and sees past the lust in my eyes, sees the boy I once was, and the man who now desperately needs her. I close my eyes and try to rest, but her hand is quite distracting. I lift it to my chest instead. In her sleep, she prods her nails into my skin, and I think it's the sexiest and most adorable thing I've ever experienced. Then again, I'd thought the same thing when she was cooking earlier. And when my mouth was on her thigh, her hands pulling at my hair. And again when she licked brownie batter. Let's backtrack to the bit about her thigh. Don't think about that, mate. Don't think about the scent of warm pears that surrounded you like cognac. Don't think about the silk of her skin against your tongue, how close you were to that place of hers where nobody else has been. Don't think about the sounds of her moans, how you were just about to blow her ever-loving mind, or how you couldn't wait to catch her when her knees buckled as her whole body trembled with pleasure. Definitely do not think of that. I shove the heel of my hand against my eye and will away the images. Damned hilt. No, I'm not perfect when I'm with Anna. I still experience thoughts about every filthy, sexy thing imaginable. That's everyday life for me. But she makes me wonder what it would be like to make love. She makes me want to take my time with every millimetre of her body in the most maddening way until she's begging for more. I let out a quiet sigh. She makes me want more from life. Things I'm not bloody allowed to want. Things I can never give her. I conceded tonight to be her boyfriend. Okay, to be honest, it was my idea because it's the one thing I can give her, my heart and my loyalty. I asked if we could be together, and the way she lit up about attaching that label to our relationship made me both joyful and sad because she deserves more. I took her to band practice with me tonight, which was awesome, aside from that awkward moment when Anna Malone got jealous and stormed out. Otherwise, it felt amazing to be out with Anna, sharing my life with her. But she deserves a boyfriend who can openly claim her on a daily basis, not just when the demons are away. And that is why fury will always live inside me. Anna might be too good, too measured to be angry about our circumstances, but I'm not. I crack open an eye and glare at the hilt for good measure. Then I hold my girl closer, glad we took this chance to be together. I won't think about tomorrow yet. When I finally let myself relax again, sleep almost immediately pulls me under. There is pure terror in Anna's eyes when her father rings at the arse crack of dawn. I don't know if she's more afraid that Belial's sending me on a mission with Cope, or that he's sending me on a mission at all. One of our Neff allies, the daughter of Duke Sinelian, has been thrown in prison for lewd conduct. It's not looking good for Xenia. In the conservative Middle Eastern town where she's being held, she's likely to be publicly beaten and executed, or sold into slavery. Her father refuses to save her since she's given in to her alcohol addiction and seems to be of no further use to his cause. I want to wipe the fear from Anna's eyes, but I can't make promises. I can't promise I won't punch Cope when I see him, nor can I promise we'll be safe in Syria. I won't lie to Anna, and she's no fool. Getting Xenia out of prison won't be easy. I want to tell her how much it means to me that Belial has asked me to go, that he trusts me with this, but I'm not sure I can put it into words without sounding like a complete idiot. Perhaps I should be afraid, but I'm not. I face the possibility of death every day. Life has been a perilous walk under Father's keen eye, his whisper is always watching. But this journey, this mission, is dangerous in a way that's worthy of death. It's the first time I've ever been called to help others rather than hurt them. A chance to die in a way that would bring honour is worth it. Her father's belief in me has filled me with so much pride, it's embarrassing. When Cope shows, the sight of him makes me so hot with anger, I want to pummel him to a bloody pulp. And if I did, he'd probably just stand there and not fight back, infuriating do-gooder that he is. He brings out feelings of inadequacy in me that I don't want to acknowledge. He was chosen to be at Anna's side as she travelled the world. He was the one facing danger in order to find allies for when it's time to fulfil the prophecy. He was her protector and teammate, not me, and I hate him for it. I hate him for all the years he's denied the urge to dive into the bed of every woman who makes eyes at him. I hate him for not beating the shite out of every man who stirs his wrath. Why can't he fuck up just once? As Capano stands before me in the living room, all suave and put together, Anna's the only thing keeping him in one piece. Her and the reminder that her father wants Capano to lead this mission into Syria. Frankly, I don't want to get on Belial's bad side. A makeup artist shows, hired by Belial, to turn Cope and me into passable Syrians. She's even brought traditional Middle Eastern clothing. I shake off my anger and let the lady have a go at me. Turns out I'm still sexy with a big-ass beard and brown eyes instead of blue. Flying is relaxing. Whisperers stay low to earth and don't bother with the friendly skies. I know I should be nervous about what's to come in Syria, or annoyed by the looks other passengers keep giving me thanks to my Middle Eastern clothing. I wonder if Cope is getting the same treatment where he sits in the back. I want to yell at all of them. I'm not a bloody terrorist, so piss off with the crazy stares. Wankers. Instead, I shake it off, close my eyes, and rest. Anna's parting words at the airport fill my head. It was always you for me, only you. And with that lovely thought floating through my mind, I sleep better than I have in ages. As it turns out, Cope is a good man to have at your side in the Middle East. His Arabic is flawless. I know only a few phrases, so I keep my mouth shut and let Cope do the talking. We travel through Damascus to pick up our weapons from Belial's human contact, and then stop near a busy mosque to search the area. My eyes scan the scene, searching for the other Nefwir to meet here. A bloke in a maroon head wrapping stands out with his boxy body type and the roundness of his face, though his skin's been given a bronze dusting and he's wearing a brown beard like me. The son of Duke Mammon from Australia. I know him as the doorman for the summits. There, I say to Capano under my breath, near the corner. The man looks over when I speak. I stretch my hearing and open it around him. Is that you, Flynn? I ask. The man gives a single nod. It's me, mate. He rubs a hand over his mouth to hide the fact he's talking and in an Aussie accent. I'll follow you out and keep my distance. I've scouted the area already, and there's a hill nearby where I can watch from afar, maybe 30 minutes outside the city. I'll give a yell if anything looks suspicious. There's 3 guards outside the compound, and it sounds like at least 2 inside. I don't think they're treating their prisoner nicely, if you know what I mean. Ah, oh, shite. Capano goes rigid. We must go, he says. Now. The 2 of us head for the car while Flynn climbs aboard a small scooter moped contraption. We navigate away from the busy area and head toward a smaller town on the outskirts of the city. It feels like it takes longer than 30 minutes on the dry, bumpy road. The city lights and sounds and scents of spices are long gone. The landscape is more barren, though beautiful in its own way. Far ahead of us, Flynn takes a dirt path that leads toward low hills. It's now dusk, and I feel the stares of suspicious eyes peeking out of squat shanties. I keep a strand of my hearing in a flimsy line behind me, concentrated around Flynn, who's found a spot on higher ground, covered with trees, for his lookout. I can see the rise of his hill clearly as we take a potholed side street to a small, darkened building. A wire fence surrounds the compound, guarded by 3 men with semi-automatic guns slung across their chests. They all stand a bit taller at the sight of our car. We pull aside and park. We decided before arriving that I would listen for warnings from Flynn while Cope focused on the mission Belial planned for us. I don't scare easily, especially where humans are concerned, but these men with their weapons and dark grey auras appear stark raving mad. Not the sort of combination that puts a bloke at ease. I treat them like the Dukes, not making eye contact but keeping my shoulders squared as we step out, so as not to show weakness. I'm ever aware of the daggers at my ankle and waist, and will not hesitate to use them. Capano stands tall, briefcase in hand, and walks forward without an ounce of trepidation. He could be a prince of Africa with the air of importance he's giving off. I'm surprised when he barks out a phrase in Arabic as he approaches them on quick feet, sounding bored and angry. Gone is his gentle spirit. I think I recognize the word girl. The guards exchange glances and frowns. We stop in front of them. Before any of the gits can respond, Cope is barking again as if they're wasting his time. The three of them jump a bit, clearly frazzled by this seemingly powerful man pretending to hail from Egypt. Cope lifts the briefcase, snaps it open to reveal piles of foreign bills, then slams it shut and says something else in that badass deep tone. And I can't help myself. I'm impressed. Maybe he took acting classes at Harvard. Whatever it is, he's bloody brilliant. Finally, one of the guards speaks. Cope responds, sounding annoyed, but then stands back and lifts his arms. He never lets go of the briefcase. They pat him down, taking a handgun from his waist. I reluctantly lift my arms as one approaches me, and I allow him to confiscate my knives. I feel naked as the weapons are stripped from my body, and not the good kind of naked. I take note where he puts the daggers in his left pocket. We're in. Excellent. They lock the gate behind us and rush into the building with guns in hand, strapped over their shoulders. Didn't anyone ever tell these minions not to run about with their fingers on the triggers? Unnerving. I'm ready to get zany and get the hell out of here. One of the guards shouts something to a man who stands as we round a dark corner. The new man looks us over, his eyes a little wild, and gives a hard nod toward a doorway. Cope marches past him and I follow. Bloody hell. My stomach sours, just as it does when one of Marissa's new girls is being trained into obedience. But Marissa doesn't allow the men to beat her girls to this extent. Zania is little more than a brown pile of bones on a dirt floor. Naked. And no, her nakedness does not rouse my lust, not a bit. One of the guards nudges her with his boot and yells something. Cope waves him off with a harsh swipe and squats beside her. He speaks to her in a rough tone, and she curls tighter. At least it's a sign of life. Cope repeats the phrase, slower and more quietly this time, and I think I understand enough of the context to put it together. You belong to me now. Capano takes her wrist and turns it over. He feels her thin bicep, checking her condition. Then he turns his head and gives a curt nod to the bloke standing in the doorway. The man comes forward, sets his gun down with a clatter, and pops open the briefcase, counting. His eyes are bright with greed. He shouts something at one of the other men, who runs off and comes back with a black cotton dress. The idiot starts trying to dress Zania, shoving the opening over her head and yelling at her when she won't straighten her arms for him. Capano quickly waves the man away and lifts Z into a sitting position, frowning. He murmurs gruffly as he coaxes her arms through. She tries to scoot away, but he follows and ignores her groaning protests until she's completely dressed. All the while, I'm silently chanting for everyone to hurry so we can get the fuck out of this hellhole. In the loose pocket of my cotton bottoms, I feel my satellite phone vibrate. I take a quick peek and silently curse. It's from Flynn. Think I have a tail, but they haven't come in sight. Also getting strange looks from two locals. I give Cope the we need to hurry eye, and he nods imperceptibly. Before the guy in charge is finished fondling the cash, Capano scoops Zania into his arms. She tries to struggle, but he grips her tighter and murmurs in Arabic for her to be still. The man on the floor lifts his gaze from the money to give Capano an evil grin of satisfaction. Cope glowers and says something about our weapons. Another man comes in with Cope's gun and my knives. I quickly take them and follow Cope as he exits, passing the men on the way out. They're huddled around the cash, grinning like they've won the lottery. One man drags himself away to escort us. I've almost forgotten about Flynn until distant sounds ring out inside my bubble of extended hearing. Arabic words spoken in a questioning tone. The scooter starting up. Footsteps running against dirt. Yells and grunts. Sounds of fighting. Shite. My palms start to sweat. I want to get out there and help Flynn, but I can't with this machine gun maniac at our heels. Suddenly the fighting quiets, and I hear the scooter zoom away in the opposite direction. Maybe Flynn's escaped. We get out of the compound and into the car, where Cope lays Zania in the back seat. As soon as we're on the road, I sign to Capano that Flynn's been discovered. We're trying to decide if we should go to him as Zania begins to moan. Drink, she whispers in Arabic. Her voice is scratchy. I unscrew the cap off a bottle of water and lean back, fitting it into her hand as she lies there. She takes one look at it through her swollen, purpled eyes and throws the damn thing back at me. Water goes everywhere before I grab it. Right, not the type of drink she's after. It's clear we can't go traipsing through the unknown hills searching for Flynn when we've got Xenia to deal with. Cope and I agree that Flynn likely got away and will meet us later. We hope. I look at Z's thin arms where she's curled on the back seat. She's emaciated. I pull a protein bar from my bag and open it. I need you to eat this. I gently nudge her forearm. At my touch, she balls tighter and screams in heavily accented English, "Don't touch me!" "Xenia, I want to help you, please. You need to eat. Leave me the hell alone!" I hold out the food again. "I won't touch you again, I swear, but you need food." She smacks the protein bar from my hand and it falls to the dirty car floor. I sigh and look to Cope, who's cringing at my failed efforts. Then I remember the pictures I took with Anna just before I left for this very purpose. I pull out my phone and hold out the screen for her to see. "Look, Z, do you remember Anna? Here we are, together. I am her ally, just like you, just like Cope." She glances at it and eyes me suspiciously. Cope picks up on this and begins talking to her in Arabic as he drives. I imagine he's telling her she's safe now, reminding her who he is and explaining who I am. I hear him say Anna's name. She seems almost calm until her whole body begins to convulse. I curse under my breath. I think she's having withdrawals or something. Cope's eyebrows knit together and he drives faster. I've no clue what to do. She dry heaves over the side of the seat, but there's nothing in her stomach to purge. I watch helplessly. "The hotel is near," Cope says. 2 minutes. We get back to the CD hotel, and Cope tells her she must walk on her own so we don't draw much attention, even though it's dark and not well lit. Her slow gait is painful to watch. Thankfully, the small walk from the car to the side door doesn't earn any unwanted attention. We use our hearing to hide around a corner until our hall is clear, then we get her to the room. The daughter of Sinelian is wrecked. She walks with a limp from her injuries, but she won't let us close enough to see what needs fixing. I run her a hot bath, but she sits on the floor of the bathroom, shaking uncontrollably, begging for a drink. "Maybe we should give her one," I begin, but Cope cuts me off. "No." I wish Anna was here. Xenia groans and begins a chattering murmur that rakes my ears. God, she's suffering. "Just one fucking drink," I whisper to Cope, but he is adamant. "In the end, it will only make her want more. She has to make it through this." Xenia snarls at him in Arabic. I squat next to her. "Please, Z, we need to get you out of here before your father returns. You need to eat something so you can be stronger, so you can heal." She looks at me, really looks at me, for the first time. "One drink," she says softly. She's so pathetic. I want to give in because I'm weak, and I keep wondering if one will really hurt. Perhaps it would calm her. But I can feel Capano's eyes glaring down at us. What would Anna do? I attempt to channel her positive energy before I speak again. "I know it feels like that's what you need, but it's not. We want to help you." I'm proud of myself for sounding so gentle and reasonable. I open my mouth to continue and she wallops me straight in the eye. Bloody fucking hell, that stings. I move away from the Nef girl, who doesn't appear as if she can lift an arm, much less throw a decent punch. It seems where there's a will, there's a way, because I'm fairly certain she's given me a black eye. Not the first time I've been hit by a girl, but it's the first time I didn't deserve it. Still, I can't bring myself to be mad. Until Cope chuckles. "Shut up," I say, standing. "You give it a go, lover boy." He frowns at me as I stalk past him and check out my eye in the mirror. Yep, it's darkening. I expect Cope to try a gentle approach, but once again he shocks me. He speaks to her with stern, dominant authority. "It's time to bathe, Xenia. We will leave the room and you will bathe yourself. Our flight to the US is in less than 5 hours. She wraps her arms around her stomach and cries, "You should have let me die." "You were not going to die," he growls. "Your fate was far worse than death." "Just leave me here. Bathe now, or I will put you in the bath and clean you myself. She eyes him with malice. He takes a hard step forward and she scuttles back. Don't touch me. I will wash myself. When it's time to leave, he says, you will be presentable. We cannot raise suspicion. He barges past me and I follow, closing the door. It's not until he sits on the bed, gripping the edge with his eyes shut, that his strong facade cracks and he begins to tremble. I want to tell him he's done well, but I can't bring myself. Instead, I sit on the other side of the bed in silence. We both relax a bit when we hear Xenia step into the water. Then she begins to cry, a mournful sound, her teeth chattering as she shakes, and it guts me. I hate the Dukes. I loathe them with every fibre of my being. I allow myself to imagine Anna, fierce and lovely, stabbing each of them with the flaming sword as all of us Neff hold them down until their souls are extinguished forever. And then another thought smacks me and I'm struck with sudden anxiety. Where is Flynn? I whip out my phone and ring him, but there's no answer. Next, I text Anna's father with the code he told us to use. Belial texts right back. Get her? Yes, I respond, but F is missing. My heart pounds, waiting for his response. Leave with or without him? Damn, that's hardcore. But I suppose I get it. Better to have one missing than two. At this point, with so few allies, we're playing a numbers game. Cope looks over, so I show him the texts, and he nods. He's tense, and I understand. We won't relax until we're on a plane far away from here. I wonder if it's too early to call Anna. I try to imagine what sort of shenanigans Blake got her into last night. You've never partied until you've partied with the son of Envy. I dial her number and lie back, grinning at the sound of her husky, hungover, half-asleep voice when she answers. Hello? I sigh and focus on her voice. I can't wait to get home to her. The rest of the trip is a blur. After Xenia bathes and dresses, she refuses to speak to us again. Cope miraculously manages to get her to eat 3 bites of warm flatbread from his fingers. I don't need to be a child of Duke Astaroth to see there's a bond between those two. I let him take care of Z for the remainder of the trip, only getting involved when absolutely necessary. He knows how to deal with her in the way that she needs, and I don't care for another black eye. Flynn shows up at the Damascus airport, completely ragged, just before our flight. He's got a rip in his shirt, and the corner of his beard has started to peel off. I point him straight to the loo to fix himself, glad he's okay. When we land in Amsterdam later that day, we all change out of our Arab get-ups into Western wear. Scanning for whisperers and seeing none, we clap Flynn on the back and he goes his separate way, off to do some travelling around Europe before returning to Australia. Xenia looks frail in her loose jeans, as if she can't manage to stand straight. But it's clear what a beautiful woman she'll be when she's well. Her arms are crossed and she taps her foot furiously as she stares into the tax-free store, her gaze locked on the bottles of liquor. Capano steps between her and the glass, and she narrows her eyes, which are no longer swollen. They're now big and dark brown and full of fire. Capano seems to be drawn to those eyes, though he's clearly not at ease with her dire need for alcohol. They stare hard at each other, connected, as if they might break into a round of intense sex right against the duty-free shop. That'd be a show. I bite my tongue against the urge to laugh and tell them to get a room. Saint Capano would die of humiliation if I said that. I'm glad when our flight is called. One step closer to seeing Anna again. During our flight, an attendant sees Xenia hunched over, hugging herself, shaking and groaning. Cope tries to play it off as motion sickness, but the flight attendant still seems worried. It certainly looks like an emergency to anyone with eyes. Cope even tries to rub her back to put on a good show, but Xenia yanks away with a yelp. Yeah, these two are going to get this plane grounded if they're not careful. It's time for me to work my charm. I smile up at the frowning attendant and beckon her nearer. She's probably late 20s, European. She swipes her eyes over me and a great deal of her worried aura lightens, suddenly forgotten. She leans down and I sit up taller to get closer as I whisper, "Between us," I say. I think my mate's lady is up the duff, if you know what I mean. Her eyes widen and she pats her stomach with question. I nod, grin. They haven't announced it yet, but I'm fairly certain. She's not been herself for a bit, but it's nothing to worry about, love. She'll be fine. I wink for good measure, then wet my lips. Her aura pops red and my body reacts without permission. No, I remind myself, feeling guilty. Well, all right then, the flight attendant says, brushing a hand down my shoulder and arm. My body tightens and I'm holding my breath. If you need anything, let me know. She dips closer. Anything at all. Go away, go away, go away, and for the love of all things holy, don't touch me again. I give her a nod and she finally turns to go up the aisle. A quick glance to the side finds Cope and Xenia both glaring at me. I suppose they didn't care for the pregnancy bit, but oh well, they should be grateful. I exhale and close my eyes. At some point, Xenia nods off, still bent over, and her head ends up on Cope's thigh. Ha 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 ha, the bloke is frozen as stone, trying not to be affected. I take advantage of the moment of peace and move to the empty row behind us. I lean my head against the window and soon fall asleep. I'm woken sometime later from a vivid dream where I'm obliterating Anna's innocence. It's quite a nice dream, but I'd rather not be having it in public. The sounds of Xenia's crying and Cope's gentle admonishments usher me back to reality with an unwelcome jolt. The kind flight attendant has covered me in a blanket while I slept. I take the blue bundle and cram it over my misbehaving lap, thinking of things that are not soft and warm, things that do not moan and arch and bend. It doesn't help. I press my fingers over my forehead as hard as I can. My knee bounces faster. I inhale a filling breath and pull out my mobile, opening the picture of me with Anna. I stare at it until the pilot tells the flight attendants to prepare for landing. Then with a heavy heart, I delete the picture. I can't wait to land. I want to see Anna embrace Xenia, for her to fill that broken girl with the same positive energy she fills me with. Energy that makes one believe they can fight both the demons inside themselves and the ones outside as well. Energy that makes one believe they can win. Chapter 26. Water and Wrath. In the wreckage of a job well done, I saw a place I'd never seen before, yeah. And that moment, I refused to close my eyes anymore. Worth Dying For by Rise Against. From the frying pan into the fire, isn't that how the saying goes? Almost immediately upon arriving in LA, we got a call from Belial to leave the area. A group of Dukes were flying into LAX from Vegas with some women they met. Blake had the idea of heading for the marina and taking his boat out to his father's private island, where we'd be safe from the mainland. Brilliant. Blake told us to think of this as a mini vacay, and after all we'd just been through in Syria, I wanted that far too much. Us blokes took the jet skis out, leaving the girls to chat on the island's dock. Thing is, it's dangerous to relax and not give yourself an out. We know that, and yet we'd come to the one place with nowhere to hide. Just our sodding luck. Thankfully, the messenger of Lucifer, Azael, is secretly in league with Belial. The dark spirit found us and warned us that the Dukes were on their way to the island. Now here we are, Capano, Xenia, and Blake are submersed under the boat dock. I'm sitting on the edge with Anna, about to jump in. Why? Because we have to hide someplace where Father cannot detect Anna's scent of innocence. Underwater. After all we've been through, you'd think I'd no longer get scared, but where Anna is concerned, there is always room for fear. My protective instinct for her has only grown, and I can hardly keep a straight mind when she's in danger. I watch Anna as she stares down at the moving waters beneath us. Strands of hair around her face are wet from running around to prepare. She looks resigned to what's coming. When she turns her face up to mine, her eyes widen to find me watching her so intensely. I still haven't told her how I feel. Not in words. I'm cursing myself now for being too afraid, knowing how much it would mean to her. The Dukes are in hearing range by now. I can't risk speaking, but I have to tell her. If we're caught today, if anything happens to us, I will hate myself for not saying it. So I give her the only thing I have, silent words. I raise a hand and make the combination I, L, U in sign language. I love you. She stares at my hand until her eyes water. She holds up her hand and mirrors mine, pressing her sign against mine, mouthing the words, I love you too. I vow we will make it out of this. She reaches out for me and I pull her against me, feeling her arms wrap around my back. I hold her close, wishing this night would be over soon. I don't know when the Dukes will arrive or how long they will stay, but I know we're in for a long evening. Blake reaches up and grabs our ankles, telling us it's time to get in. Anna and I both slide down, holding onto the planks, and she sucks in a loud breath of air as her body hits the water. The first bout of worry bombards me when I feel how the sea has chilled within the past hour since we were on jet skis. The water is always cold here, but Anna is so much smaller than me. She'll freeze if we're in too long, especially after the sun sets. She gives me a firm nod that she'll be okay. I know she's a fighter. We quietly swim to the posts underneath the dock where Cope and Xenia have grabbed hold. The damn things are slick with sea life, making them difficult to grip. The five of us look around at each other, ready to weather what's to come. I stare at Anna and she gives me one last brave nod. Please, please let this be over quickly. I hope the Dukes will get their fucking kicks and get the hell out of here. Surely they don't plan to stay all night. I hunker down with the others and wait as the sea temperature drops. Xenia seems world stronger after only a day under Anna's nurturing. She got her to shower and eat a bit. I'm glad, because Z'd never be able to survive this if she was in the same shape now as 2 days ago. Her quick Nephilim healing probably helped as well. It doesn't take long for the Dukes to arrive. They've even brought Flynn, which surprises me. His father must have called him to Vegas soon after we parted in Europe. Father, Malcolm, Mammon, and Astaroth came to the island to work, bringing married and engaged women who they planned to ruin, to soil with adultery, guilt, and regret. Hours pass, and it's bloody cold. Nearly unbearable. I can't stand to see Anna's lips turning blue and her body trembling uncontrollably. At some point during the Duke's exploits, Anna begins to lose it. She's shivering like mad. She lets out a squeak of fear and jumps as if something's rubbed up against her underwater. Then she nearly laughs, delirious. I brush from my post, stiff and numb, wrapping my arms around her frozen body. I press a hand over her lips to remind her to be quiet, and she slowly nods. I keep one hand firmly around her waist and hold the pole with the other. We cling underneath the dock for hours, pushed and pulled by the Pacific tides, waiting for the Dukes to finish their bloody business so I can get Anna to warmth. But the night only turns worse. I thought perhaps the Dukes had brought Flynn along to be their bodyguard and lackey, to drop the anchor and fetch them wine. But their reason was more sinister than that. Much more. They know Flynn was in Syria, and that Xenia was bought by two mystery men. They know there are traitors among them.
Well, you don't know, son,
Duke Mammon whispers with malice,
is that Duke Sinilian borrowed one of Duke Themis's sons to keep watch over the transaction of the girl while he was away.
Cope and I share a shocked glance. Another Neph had been there in Syria with us. He'd seen Flynn get into the fight on that hill, seen his red hair when his head covering fell back. But it sounds as if he hadn't seen me or Cope.
Tell me who you're working with,
Mammon shouts above us. Don't tell them, I silently beg. Stay strong, mate. Anna is shivering violently and my worry has turned to panic. In the moonlight, her lips are lavender, and I'm not sure how she's able to keep herself afloat. The only part of her that looks alive is her eyes as she watches the action on the dock through a chink in the wood.
I will tell you nothing, old man, Flynn says.
Bloody right on him. He's ready to die for this cause. His father, Mammon, holds a gun to his head, but Flynn is unflinching.
Last chance, Mammon says.
I'll see you in hell, Flynn responds, and he sounds almost liberated, free. I touch my fingers to Anna's cold lips and hold her tight as a gunshot splits the air. Her body jolts in my arms. I press my cheek to the side of her head. For the second time in my life, I witness a fellow Neff murdered by a Duke. Unlike the first time, I'm not numb. I feel the brutality of Flynn's death and it hurts. It's personal. I watch helplessly as our worthy ally's soul is pulled away to hell by demon spirits, and my rage threatens to make us known. I watch as Z's teeth chatter and Anna goes limp with grief in my arms. I watch as Blake has lost all remnants of humour and even Cope's face is desolate. I hate that we must sit here in silence, vulnerable and defenceless. How much more can we take of this? How many more of us must die before we can act? I've never been more relieved than when the Dukes leave the island. Anna's frozen stiff as I hoist her onto the dock with my weakened arms. My sore muscles ache as I pull her into my lap and bring Zania closer to Anna. Cope and Blake quickly leave us for the other side of the island, with the hope of retrieving Blake's boat as fast as possible. Anna and Zania's shaking has become violent, and they can hardly open their eyes. Shit, I think you have hypothermia. I rub Anna's arms, but she's soaked through. I know the wet clothes are supposed to come off, but I need to wait until she's in the boat. I surround her with my arms and she encircles Zania weakly. It's okay, I say. You'll be all right now. The boat is nearly here. Hurry, hurry, hurry. The boat finally docks and Cope jumps off. Together we rush the girls down into the cabin. My first instinct is to put them on the bed, but they're soaked. I set Anna in a chair and Cope follows my lead. Can we get the heat on down here? I call up to Blake. We need to get them out of these wet clothes.
I'm trying to figure it out, he yells back. I might need some help up here. Can one of you guys find the extra blankets?
I squeeze Anna's hand. I'll be right back, love. We're going to get you warm. With eyes closed and jaw rattling, she nods. I take a running leap up the stairs and find Blake shivering at the panels. The heat's not labeled. I've never had to use it. We try different switches until we finally figure it out. Then we run about readying the boat so it doesn't drift away while we're thawing. When I go back down the stairs, I can hear the heater cranking, and I'm so ready to get Anna dry and warm. What I see stops me in my tracks. Capano is taking off Anna's shorts. His hand is on her calf. Anger rumbles through me at this blatant act of intimacy. I can barely get the words out. Get your bloody hands off her! He freezes, caught. I'm shaking all over now. It's my job to care for Anna, my job to touch her. Only me, all of my unvoiced fury over his betrayal comes back, full force, driven by the day's horrific events. He always knew how I felt for her, and yet he still pursued. Even now he thinks he has the right to touch her. Capano moves away and stands to face me. The girls, like mannequins, open their eyes and stare blearily up at us.
She is in the worst condition, Cope points to Anna. The wet clothing must be removed.
Not by you! I can't believe you take advantage of this situation! Deep down, I know the truth. I know he was not making any kind of advance, but the familiarity and openness he shares with Anna kills me. I want it gone, once and for all. I can't handle her being close to any other man. Anna would point out my own insecurities, but whatever it is, I'm feeling irrational and I just can't stop. I need to be mad.
Cope's eyes slant at me, seething. You go too far, brother.
Seeing his wrath ignited thrills me. I move forward and so does he. It would feel bloody good to throw a wobbler right now, to pummel each other until we're too tired and sore to be angry anymore. I owe Cope an ass-kicking, plain and simple, for kissing my girl when I couldn't be in the picture. You will never touch her again. Cope's badge is pulsing dangerously. I'm ready, fists clenched, blood and adrenaline rushing through me at a dizzying speed. We are face to face, anger growing, until we're suddenly shoved apart and Blake is looking back and forth between us. His intervention causes my hearing to clear a bit, enough that I hear him say, "Go, take care of Anna." With sudden clarity, I remember the reason for all this. Anna, hypothermia, shite. I am an epic idiot. I shoulder past the guys and rush to Anna's side. Zania helps shield her while I get her shirt off, then I wrap the blanket around her and carry her to the bed. Her skin is like ice. I spread another blanket on top of her and she whimpers. I wonder why no one else is moving into action, and when I turn, I see exactly why. My anger has been